Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the DART History.
Art History?
DART History Department here at Car Talk Plaza. Or maybe we should say DART is History Department.
Well, the DART is History, and we evidently have gotten more email and maybe snail mail on this topic than we have ever gotten on any topic ever in the history
Pretty pathetic,
of
isn't
Car
it?
Talk. I mean, everybody has an idea about what we should do with the DART, which, as if you haven't tuned in for a week, the DART is dead. The DART is gone. It was totaled by a snowplow, the worst possible kind
in
of
in the words death. Of your wife, ding dong, the DART is dead. The DART is dead.
Ding dong, the ugly DART is dead. Yeah, that's what she did sing a lot. She was very happy, but that's not nice. Others have shown the proper respect.
I actually helped her put it to music.
Well, I mean, we've had lots of ideas, actually, about what to do with the DART. You know, like cut it up into little pieces and make paperweights out of it. The problem is that the DART, even its soul and body cadaver.
This is sad.
Missing. Because I made a deal with the insurance company. They gave me the $100 that they said it was worth. And I said, that's good enough for me. And within minutes, it left the place where it had been towed to,
yes,
and went to a junkyard. And within minutes of being in the junkyard, evidently,
they said, get it out of here.
Get it out of here. It's given us a bad name. And they crushed it. And within minutes after that, it went to some place called Pulverizing R Us. And they pulverized it into, we think, which is what we've heard. They've pulverized it into, not pulver, and then not
shredded.
Quite the right name.
Shredded.
They smushed it up into little pieces.
Shredded.
So we're trying to track down at least the pieces, I guess.
To do what?
I don't know. Oh. I mean, so many people have said make paperweights out of it. We'll pay you $1. So if they're $1 a piece, the thing weighed about 3,000 pounds. That's $3,000.
Yeah. Poetic.
Speaking of poetic, want me to read a poem?
Of course.
The poem is really good. It's called, again, Object DART by Charlie Boyd. It was an early day in spring, felt good to be alive. Tommy's son and friends went out for a short spring drive. They chose the DART, the old Dodge DART, to take them on their way. And that old car was happy, so, to be their choice that day. These days, the DART had passed its prime. Torn vinyl, rusted steel. But old cars have a soul inside. They think and they can feel. The DART remembered days gone by when its top rolled down, when it gave joyrides in the spring, the envy of the town. They came upon a traffic light and stopped to rest a spell. The sun shone bright, the air was clear, and all the world seemed well. In front, a local ambulance sat waiting for the light. Behind, a snowplow came up fast. Something wasn't right. The snowplow honked, careened, and veered. Watch out, for goodness sakes! Something had gone terribly wrong. The snowplow had no brakes. It's hard to say how cars know things. Somehow that old car knew that Tom's son's life was on the line and its choices were so few. This is like 'twas the night before Christmas. There really wasn't any time to weigh the options now. In front there was the ambulance and back there was the plow. Deep within its rusted heart, DART knew what must be done. Without seat belts and no airbags, it must rescue Tommy's son. And oh, that sound, that awful sound of crushing steel and glass. The DART took all that snowplow's force, faithful to the last. Who knows where that old car found such strength within its rust? A lesser car would have thrown the towel and crumbled into dust. Perhaps the thought its days were few helped to quell its fears. That brave old car was 36. That's 90 in human years. Then it says, see footnote.
Footnote.
The premise that the ratio of human to automobile years is 2.5 to 1 is without any scientific merit whatsoever. It merely serves the author's purpose at this time and therefore falls within the respected category of
poetic license.
The universe holds mysteries we can scratch and we can comb. The only thing we really know is Tommy's son came home. Somewhere in the great beyond, the sun is shining bright. The gas is plentiful. There is no rust to fight. The pavement's always clean and dry in that land above, and cherished autos gleam and shine, polished by clouds of love. Tommy's heart is broken now, and emptiness remains. For in the spot where Dart once sat, there's naught but oil stains. But Tommy knows there is a place where old dogs and autos go, a place where cars are pampered and once dim headlights glow. And if ever a car earned winner's lap after its earthly race, that old Dodge Dart deserved to go to that eternal parking space. Wow. Charlie Boyd, Rochester, New York, 14607.
Oh.
Man, Charlie, you have outdone yourself. We may have to replace Andy.
He may write a poem like that every week. We don't know if he's outdone himself.
This may be
one of his poorer efforts.
Jeez. I think we have to read it every Christmas Eve.
Oh, God. Please call anyone. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Call before I get sick. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jessica from Nashville.
What's up, Jessica?
Well, my car is making this really weird noise. I have a 1995 Chevrolet Beretta.
Where are you from, by the way?
Nashville. She's from Nashville.
I'm currently in Nashville, but I don't think I'm from Nashville, so.
Are you trying to become a recording star?
No, I'm in graduate school, actually.
No kidding.
I can't sing a darn thing, so I went to grad school.
In what?
Well, if I finish my thesis, I'll be getting a degree in geology, a master's degree.
Great.
So you're going to figure out where to drill for oil. You're going to be...
No, I'm not one of those geologists. I like the landscape, and I play with dirt.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I look at landscape dynamics and how the landscape forms and what that can tell us about the history of the area, and, like long-term history, 500,000 years or so.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're not going to put your education to any practical use.
No.
In the sense that it could earn you a living. You got it. Just as long as you know. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good, because you're doing something that interests you.
Very much so.
I agree. Not everything ought to make money. And as long as your needs are modest,
mm-hmm.
you'll be all right.
Well, that's why I'm driving the Chevy Beretta.
Yeah, we can see that. So what's your noise?
Well, it is this crazy, squeaky noise. It sounds like metal rubbing on metal, like a knife on a pie plate, you know?
Oh, that's not good.
Well, it's
I don't
not.
Think I like that.
Uh-oh. Well, every time I start the car, it does that. For about 5 or 10 minutes.
When you start the engine, before
mm-hmm.
you start moving?
Before I start moving. And then while I'm moving.
But you don't have to be moving to get the noise.
I don't have to be moving to get the noise.
And it sounds like it's coming from under the hood.
Yeah.
Can you make the sound?
It's not a fan belt screech, because I had a truck once that did a fan belt screech.
Well, one of the things that makes you maybe think that it isn't a fan belt noise.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the last car you had a different kind of fan belt.
But it doesn't make that kind of like, you know, when a fan belt screeches, it kind of reaches a pitch, and then goes back down.
Right.
Right, this just stays at one pitch.
Even if you rev up the engine?
It kind of goes faster.
So the frequency of the, if it were composed of little pulses,
mm-hmm.
that changes, but the frequency of the tone doesn't change.
Exactly.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, can't you see the process here?
Oh, man.
How we're homing right in on it.
Yes.
Do you have any idea what it is?
No, not really.
I didn't think so. But it almost doesn't matter. Does it?
No, it really...
almost, I mean, just the whole concept of the pulses, the frequency, it almost doesn't matter.
It is kind of a letdown, though, isn't it? To be
it would
so
be
close.
Nice if you could then say, uh-huh, and give her the answer. But it's almost anticlimactic.
It is. So with that, we'll just say goodnight, Jessica.
Okay. Thank you.
I think that it may not be the belt, although it certainly could be, but I think it is the belt tensioner.
Ah.
This car, I believe, has one belt called
the serpentine.
Serpentine belt, because it goes around and like a serpent.
Uh-huh.
Which is a flat grooved belt.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the old days where we had belts that the cross section of which was a V.
Mm.
And those were called appropriately V belts. Very good. And so these
And some of them had none at all, and we call those Sansa belts.
and what happens is this tensioner is supposed to keep that belt taut.
Uh-huh.
So that it's you know, has the right amount of tension on it, so it doesn't slip on any of its pulleys.
Uh-huh.
And if that tensioner goes bad, there's a bearing in it.
Oh.
And that bearing...
That's metal.
That bearing could make that same kind of noise that is akin to a screeching belt, but in fact is a metal on metal of a bearing. That's what you hear.
Yeah, that's what it sounds. It's definitely metal on metal.
It's kind of like plate tectonics.
Speaking of geology,
anytime soon.
Your car's going to have an eruption.
God, I hope not.
And I mean, if that's the case, it ought to be easily traceable by a mechanic, because he ought to be able to hear it and stick his ear right next to it and say,
Okay.
And you know, for $100, you're going to be back in business.
Wonderful.
See you later.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Eric calling from Philadelphia.
Eric with a C.
Eric with a C.
Philadelphia.
And an E and an R and an I.
Yeah, we got that.
What's the deal with Philadelphia? Is Philadelphia okay?
You know, I've spent 4 years here, and I've loved every minute of it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Are you a student at UPenn?
I am a student at UPenn at the medical school.
No kidding.
Yep.
I mean, people always say that part of town is bad, dangerous.
No.
What
really?
Better place to have the medical students? I mean,
you got a lot of emergency room experience.
Exactly.
It has its character.
So what's shaking, Eric?
Well, the thing is, I've got a 91 LeBaron that's just been killing me for a long time now, and I'm hoping you can help me out.
I'll bet it has. Yeah.
Well, I spent the past year out of the country, and I left the car with my brother.
Oh.
And when I came back, he'd noticed a small problem with it, that it no longer liked to accelerate too often. We'd go to get on the highway, and it just kind of putter along, coming up slowly, slowly, slowly.
Yeah.
So I brought it into a shop, and they said to me, well, do you think it's in the transmission or the engine?
They're asking you.
They're asking me that.
Good.
And I just paused. And I was like, I have no idea what the difference is.
Yeah.
Had it been an anatomy question, I could have handled it. But,
Yeah, right.
Then it started making this noise. It's coming from the engine, it sounded like. The engine, supposing. Going, bup, 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 nonstop.
Oh, uh-huh.
This went on for a few days. Brought it into another shop. They're like, oh, your engine's probably going to die and need to be replaced very, very soon. What am I supposed to do with that? I'm a student. I don't have the money to replace
it. No,
that.
You don't.
Gee, I suspect that they failed to look at one very simple thing. It's not simple to fix, but they overlooked the fact that this has bad compression on one cylinder.
Mm.
Bad compression.
Or maybe a couple of cylinders.
Okay.
And the reason it's got low power is that it ain't kicking. What is it, a four-cylinder? Might be a six.
I think it's a six-cylinder, actually.
Does it seem to run rough at idle now?
No, not too much.
Not too much.
You know, after it started making the noise and I was told that it needed to have the engine replaced, I was like, well, you know, what could I do to lower that? They're like, well, why don't you put in some thicker oil, like a 2050?
Mm.
So I brought it to go get the oil changed, and there I had two shops refuse to change my oil for me.
Oh, it's that bad.
Because of the noise.
Oh, yeah, they don't want to be the last one. It's just, well... I'm sure
so it's a constant...
There's got to be an analogy in the medical profession.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good experience. Sure, a guy comes in and you... I'm sorry, I can't look at you because I'm sure that you're done for.
That's called managed health care, I think.
That's how it works.
There you go. Well, I'm sure that they hear something that's very bad, and they don't want to be responsible for doing its final oil change.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you'll come back and sue them and claim that they didn't put the plug back in and you lost all your oil and it seized and all that.
And this business. Problem may be unrelated to your other problem.
All right.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing.
What happened was I put oil in on myself, and most of the noise has gone away. But still, occasionally, it's not accelerating. And now I'm just wondering, am I sitting on a time bomb?
Yeah, no, I think the engine's done for, and I think it would be interesting, and it would be an interesting academic exercise to discover why it has low power. But
okay.
It's a moot point because the engine's going to blow up in 3 days.
Oh, 3 days.
Okay. Well, here's what I would do. Do you change the oil or you added oil?
I just added oil, and now that the noise has gone away, I'm thinking about getting it changed.
Oh, you got to change the oil, even if you do it yourself.
Okay. Which is another technique I really don't have under my belt.
Yeah.
No, you take it someplace and ask them to put in 2050 motor oil.
Right.
And I would strongly recommend...
Motor honey.
Rizlone.
Okay.
It's an oil system additive.
It's an additive, and it will quiet that baby right down.
Now, do I, when they change the oil, do I add them to Aspen?
Yes.
Oh, no, no. I would do this at night.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 All right. So under a full moon.
Be prepared for the absolute worst, Eric.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's not what I needed to hear.
This is not good.
No, it's not good, but interesting.
What do you need a car for anyway?
Do shopping, get around.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I mean, for that kind of stuff, it might last.
Just don't take it on any trips or anything?
I wouldn't.
Uh-huh.
But if you just puddle jump around town, it could last you right through the end of medical school and into internships and who knows?
All right.
Residency,
all kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, it could, but it won't. In fact, the best way to prevent the thing from dying is to drive it without starting the engine.
Yeah.
Coast.
Coasting is good.
Coasting's good.
Okay.
Good luck, Eric.
See you, Dr. Eric.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Tommy, do you remember last week's puzzler?
Do I remember last week's puzzler?
No idea, huh? That's what I figured. Well, it's a horticultural story of time, space, and lawn care. And I'll have the entire saga in just a minute.
Well, this old car has had countless drivers. She got dings and her mileage is high. The interior is ripped and faded. Watching the new models pass by, she had many a man take the wheel, a few women under the hood, had a couple of dogs in the back seat, stripped down a few times where she stood.
And even though cardiologists everywhere say, oh, pass the trans fat whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a jackhammer operator and miss grating noises when you get home.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the answer to last week's puzzler. And
which
here,
I remember.
Here it is. This guy has a new house built, and as luck would have it, his entire backyard is just dirt, and he's planning on having a big 4th of July celebration. So he goes to the local nursery and tells the fellow there, I need to buy some grass seed because it's almost June, and I want to have a yard full of grass for my party. Anyway, the nursery fellow recommends sod, but that's too expensive. He recommends seed, but that's too slow and, you know, unpredictable. Mm. Finally, the fellow at the nursery says, hey, we've got this new product. It's a plug of grass about the size of your fist. And you plant it in a central location in your yard. And every day, it doubles in size. Right?
Yeah.
So he asks the owner of the house to draw a picture of his backyard with the dimensions. And he says, well, I've done the math, and all you need is one of these.
Wow.
So the homeowner says, you mean if I plant one of these on June 1st, by June 30th, I'll have a full lawn? The guy says, righto. But once the lawn gets to be the right size, you have to spray it with this arrestor spray so it doesn't grow up the side of your house and across the street and eat your kids. So the homeowner says, you sure you did the math right? He says, oh, yeah, plant one of these, and in 30 days, you'll have a full lawn in your backyard. And the homeowner says, great, but just to be safe, I'll take two.
Good thinking.
So the question is, if one plug planted on June 1st will give him a full lawn on June 30th, when he buys two plugs, on what day, and I did add plus or minus a day or two, would he need to apply the arrestor spray to make the lawn the right size?
Yeah. Boy, oh boy, oh boy.
Now, logic would tell you, well, if he bought two, he'd be done June 15th, right?
Maybe earlier.
Maybe. But the answer is, instead of his lawn being finished on June 30th, it's done on June 29th. Because all it does is gain him one day.
It does,
because don't forget, if you plant one, the next day, how many do you have? Two. Right?
Well, you don't really have two.
Well, you have double the size.
You have double the size.
Which is what you'd get if you bought two of them. And then what happens the next day?
Yeah.
You got four. Yeah. So all it does is lop off the first day. So that's the answer. He sprays it on June 29th, and if he doesn't, then it eats his house.
Wow.
Do we have a winner?
Yeah, of course we do. The winner is Drew Henderson from Moorhead, Kentucky.
Drew Henderson from Moorhead, Kentucky.
And for having his correct answer chosen from among all the correct answers that we got this week, Drew is going to get a $25 gift certificate to the Car Talk Shameless Commerce Division, with which he can get our best-selling CD, Car Talk Cartoons.
The CD is tax-deductible, right?
Well, you can file it under capital losses of good taste if you want. I don't know.
Well, we're going to have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of today's show. In the meantime, we'd love to take your calls at 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-82-27-82-55.
And that comes out to be Car Talk?
Amazingly.
What
Hello.
Are the chances of that?
You're on Car Talk.
This is Doug from Lawrenceville, Georgia.
How you doing, Doug?
Hi, Doug.
Good. And yourselves?
Not bad.
Great. I have a problem with my CV joints. I have a 1990 Honda CRX. Got 117,000 miles on it.
Mm-hmm.
And between about 105 and 110,000, I started hearing a small noise. It was almost like bike cards, you know, or cards in your bike.
Like a baseball card stuck in your spokes.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
But it only happened when I turned left from a stop position. You know, and I was thinking about selling the car, but I couldn't tell the guy, you know, let's only drive right. You know, so...
Yeah, you can tell them to meet you someplace where there are only right turns.
Absolutely. So,
well, why don't you just fix it?
Well, I looked under the car, and I noticed the crack. There was a cracked boot on the driver's side.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I replaced that, you know, refilled it with the grease.
Oh, no.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't know if the dirt got in there, and it was just that bad. That,
well,
you know,
it wasn't so much that the dirt got in, it's that the metal got out.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, the metal that comprises the joint got worn away. That's why it started making the noise. And all the grease in the world ain't going to fix that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's sort of like dropping the chainsaw on your leg and putting Vaseline on it. that'll close it right up.
Yeah. So, you know, now I'm here at 117,000 miles, and it's not just when I turn left from a stop position. It's when I turn left, right, when I'm going fast, going slow, it doesn't matter.
And pretty soon you won't be going fast or slow. You won't be going anywhere.
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Because it's going to break.
That's what I'm wondering.
Oh,
is
my
axle going to fall off, or is the wheel going to fall off?
All of the above.
Well, the wheel won't fall off.
Yeah.
The wheel will not fall off. It's very likely that the axle will just shear itself off.
Right, and then the wheel won't turn.
Huh.
So you need to... But,
and you're on the verge of it if you've been driving all this time.
Yeah.
And it's getting worse and worse.
But you don't drive this car far from home anymore, right?
No, not at all.
Let's see how long it can last.
Yeah. Keep copious notes.
I'll tell you, very often customers will come in with a similar noise, and I will tell them, look, you've got to replace the axle because it's going to break. And the question everyone asks, because it's fairly expensive, is how long can it go?
How long do I have, doctor?
And I don't know. So I'm relying on you, Doug. You could be, Doug, the Chuck Yeager of CV joints.
I guess I'm just trying to push my luck, though.
You could go to Mach 2.
Because, you know, on this car, I haven't replaced the timing belt either.
Oh, I love it.
And that should be done, what, between 60 and 80, somewhere around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, you're pushing the limits, and that's wonderful.
We need people.
Just hope and pray.
That's what America is all about, Doug.
At some point, you're going to step on the gas, and the car simply isn't going to move.
Uh-huh.
And just pray that a semi is not barreling down on you when you're taking a left turn across a highway, and that's the end of Doug.
Yeah.
I guess so.
That's the only real problem, unless you, and maybe you could install some kind of an ejection seat.
Yeah, I would get my affairs in order if I were you. Good luck, Doug.
But if you want to sell the car, I mean, you got to spend a few $100 and get it fixed.
Yeah.
And by now, you might need all of them. You might need both sides.
Okay.
See you.
Great.
See you later.
Thanks for calling.
Your help.
Bye-bye.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
It is true. I mean, Doug could be the one.
Well, I mean, someone has to, you know, push the envelope, as they say.
Well,
we don't know.
To put him in the category of Chuck Yeager, it didn't occur to me, I must admit. But you're absolutely right.
Well, he may be closer to who's the guy that took the weather balloon flight?
Larry Walton.
Larry Walton. He may be closer to Larry than Chuck, I think.
Same idea, though, you know.
For those of you who don't remember, Larry Walters is the fellow who bought at an Army surplus store a bunch of weather balloons and filled them up with helium and attached them to an aluminum lawn chair.
Yeah.
And sat in the lawn chair armed with
A BB gun,
and that's about it.
He had everything tied to the bumper of his car, he cut himself loose and managed to climb to 20,000 feet above
Los
Angeles.
And his idea was that he would, in order to descend, he would shoot out the balloons one at a time, and after having shot out a few, he dropped the gun.
What a man.
But I can see Doug doing that. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Mandy from St. Louis.
Hi, Mandy from St. Louis. What's going on?
Well, I've got a car problem and a sibling problem kind of rolled into one.
Oh.
Okay, well, I got those two, so go ahead.
Yeah, me too.
So I was in my sister's car. We're coming back from a restaurant. And had, you know, maybe a margarita or so.
Oh, and you hurled into the cup holder.
No, no. Okay. She actually did that a couple weeks ago. So she goes inside our house to, like, get cigarettes so we can go someplace else. And there's this metal spoon in the car. And she hates it when I mess with, like, things that are hanging in her car. So I figured it'd be a good idea. I was going to stick this metal spoon sticking out of her air conditioning vent. So she gets in and, you know, yells at me and says I'm, you know, stupid and irritating her. The problem is, though, I go to get it out and it falls in. So it falls down underneath, like, in the vents.
Vents that are in the dashboard?
Yeah, and I guess my question is this a problem? But more importantly, how do I get her to shut up about it?
Oh, she's pissed at me,
and she keeps getting me to do stuff for her.
This is a real spoon, like something you'd use at the dinner table?
Yeah, like a metal one.
How the heck did that thing ever fit?
Well, what was it doing there, do you know?
No, the spoon was in the car for no reason.
Well, it's kind of a mystery, because I had the spoon in my purse for no reason, and she put it in her car.
So this is a spoon that you stole from the restaurant?
No, I think it was from our house.
Oh, okay. So the spoon was, you stuck it into the vent.
Yeah.
And you stuck it so that it was mostly in the vent and just a little bit hanging out.
Yeah.
And then she went and pushed it all the way in?
No, I tried to take it out
and it went
all the way in. I can't even see it in there.
And now she's on your case.
Yeah.
All right, first of all, what kind of a car is this?
It's a Pontiac Grand Am.
Is this her spoon to start with?
I think it was a spoon from her house.
I think you should sneak into her house with her someday and steal another spoon. And then, next time you're in the car, you look underneath and you say, you won't believe it, the spoon just fell out.
Oh, it's on the floor.
Yeah, and you're going to say, I don't know how it fell out, but here it is on the floor of the car.
And you could say, look, I'll call the Car Talk guys and maybe they can explain how it found its way out.
Yeah, but we don't know either.
But what serendipity that it fell out somehow. It couldn't possibly have stayed in there. Something that big couldn't have stayed in there for that long. The truth is, you're never going to get it out.
Oh, no.
Oh.
No, but it doesn't make any difference. Does it rattle? Does it make any noise?
No, I mean, it hasn't made any noise.
Well, that's
and
good.
And she said that it's like nothing's really wrong with the air conditioning. I tried to get it out, like, with one of those magnet devices, but...
No, you're never going to get it
out.
Well,
it may eventually find its way down, the more I think about it. Is this the vent right in the middle of the dash?
Yeah.
Okay. It may find its way down to where the blower motor is. And if it does, it's going to jam up the blower motor, the fan.
Okay.
And when you'll know when it happens, you'll hear... It'll be accompanied by smoke and all. Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
And you better hope that you're not in the car when that happens.
Yeah. No, you have to fake it and tell her that the spoon fell out from somewhere.
And she'll say, no, that spoon had a nick in the corner. I know this isn't the same. So, well, good luck, Mandy. But you know what happens when you lie?
Yeah.
You always get caught.
You'll get caught.
Yeah.
And you're going to lie again and again and again until you get caught finally.
Okay.
But you could alternatively tell her that it's not going to harm anything unless it gets stuck in the blower motor.
Okay, so there's no real harm, like, right now.
Not, no.
We hope not.
No, and there'll be nothing that'll happen to you if you stay out of her car. You'll be all right. Good luck and see you later.
All right, thanks.
Take care. Bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Yeah, this is Brian from Bend, Oregon.
Hey, Brian, what's
Bend.
Up? No, Brian from Bend.
Ben,
yeah, Brian from Bend.
Bend, Dorrigan. What's up, Bri?
Well, I've got a dilemma.
Yeah.
I have two different ways to drive to work. One way is it takes about 10 miles. I go through 5 traffic lights, the busy traffic, and that way takes about 20 minutes. I have this other way to drive to work, which is about 7 miles, no traffic lights. It's on a deserted set of roads, and one of the roads, stretch of the roads, is a dirt road. A dirt road's about a mile with full of potholes, mud holes, washboards, and a single lane. You need a four-wheel drive vehicle.
Yeah.
The difference between the two routes is about 5 minutes. If I take the short route, it's 5 minutes faster, and it's a much more scenic way to go. My wife drives the long way, and I drive the short way.
Yeah.
She also has a sport utility. We have two sport utility vehicles. Mine's an 85 Land Cruiser.
Mm.
And I'm wondering what damage, if any, am I causing to my car by going 20 to 30 miles an hour on a very rough road.
Do you take this road every day?
Every day.
And does your wife take the other one every day?
She takes the other one every way.
What an awesome opportunity for research. Wow. See, I would run out.
You
right
may be
now.
Eligible for a grant.
You, of course, a grant and a PhD from somewhere USA.
Yes,
absolutely.
Somewhere there's a college dying to give you a PhD.
Yeah. Most of them are in Massachusetts or Arkansas. No, this is a perfect opportunity. I mean, Consumer Reports couldn't do research like this. I mean, with all their resources, they got hundreds of guys doing stuff. They couldn't have the opportunity.
I tell you who's going to fund this. Toyota.
Toyota.
They're going to demonstrate that the Land Cruiser doesn't suffer any more wear and tear by driving on the dirt road.
This is your chance to get two brand new Land Cruisers.
Well, that's $100,000.
Yeah,
that's,
I know.
$100,000.
Pretty good, huh? What's our cut?
You can have my old one.
You can have
trooper.
The 85.
Well, I'll tell you, no matter what, I would avoid a dirt road at all costs.
Oh, really?
Because what it's doing is it's twisting the body. I mean, yeah. even though you think, well, you know, you have a suspension, and that's the reason the suspension is separate from the body. It's true and it isn't true. The body is getting twisted. Welds break. Well, things get loose. The thing will become a rattle trap.
Ball joints are shaking up and down in their sockets. I mean, all this stuff is, you're wrecking it. So,
yeah, and worse than that, I mean, there's nothing to see on this other road. I mean, it's devoid of people.
He said it was more scenic. I didn't agree with him, of course, but because you've seen one tree, you've seen them all.
Well, the difference between the roads, the one road you're going through a bunch of trailer parks, the other way you're going through pretty much the woods. You see deer occasionally.
Oh, that is nice, yeah.
And you're the guy that likes the woods?
Right.
If you really enjoy the serenity of that one-mile ride in the woods or whatever distance you drive in sylvan splendor, then to hell with the car. Just do what you think is best. It'll do wonders for your mental health.
Right. It's only a car.
Right.
There you go.
Well, thank you.
Hey,
see
let
you,
us
Brian.
Know what you decide, Brian. I mean, we've had a long, involved conversation here, and we've pursued many different avenues here, and I'd like to know
which avenue you're going to pursue.
When you hang up, you're going to say, morons. I'm just curious, but who knows?
Yeah.
See you later. Thanks okay. for calling.
Thank you.
I mean, how many people hang up and say, oh, a couple of jerks? What did I waste my time calling?
It's not
them?
The ones that hang up that say that. It's the ones that turn the radio off and say it. I'm more worried about them. We only have a few callers a week. Hey, Tommy, it's time we took a little break so our favorite public radio stations can identify themselves.
And public radio listeners can take their fingers out of their ears now.
We'll be back with a brand new earth-shattering puzzler in just a minute.
Just a kid in 58, full of expectation. 'Twas a new car, time of transportation. Ford's bright idea was was a futuristic car. This is the Edsel, it'll go real far. Old folks said it had a horse collar grill. I pictured a jet intake, what a thrill. The speedometer spun around, it wasn't standing still. With teletouch transmission on the steering wheel, it was going, going, going the way of the Edsel, lost somewhere in space and time. It was going, going, going the way of the Edsel, rapidly fading, losing polish and shine.
And even though Ivan Pavlov reflexively rolls over in his grave to turn off the radio whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR. We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
Yeah.
And this is one of the promised in the series of the string puzzles.
Oh, great.
Oh, I thought you were going to say,
looking forward to the string puzzle.
You don't even remember the string puzzle.
No, I don't.
You have in your possession two pieces of string. For the sake of argument, let's say they're a couple of feet long.
Got it.
Right? But it doesn't really matter. And they can both be different lengths.
Yeah. Okay.
And they are burnable like fuses. In other words, you could light either end of either of the strings, and the string would burn. So if you lit the end of one string, it would burn in an hour's time. It would take an hour for the string to burn from the beginning. Rather a slow burning fuse, but nonetheless,
wow,
it would take an hour. However, there's a little wrinkle. The fuse or the string does not burn at any constant or predictable rate. For example, right, it might burn up 90% of the string in the first 5 minutes.
And then take 55 minutes to get the last piece.
Exactly, the last 10%. You don't know. Or vice versa, or any combination there. Or it might speed up, slow down, da-da. You got it?
So all you know is that if you lit one end, the string would be gone in an hour.
Exactly.
I got it so far.
You could light, if you lit one end, the string would be gone. You can light either end, obviously. Yeah. But it doesn't make any difference.
Sure.
The strings are symmetrical. Okay?
Yeah.
You might not think so, but if you lit the other end, it would also take an hour to burn. The question is
at a different rate, obviously.
With only a Zippo lighter.
Yeah.
And these two strings, how would you measure 15 minutes of time?
15 minutes?
15 minutes.
Are you sure you got this right?
15 minutes.
15 minutes?
15 minutes!
Really?
Yeah. Now, there are actually two solutions to this, and I will accept either one.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because coming up sometime in the near future is string puzzle number B.
Wow.
Which only has one solution. But,
well, I have to say that is a great... I don't care what the answer is. The question is wonderful.
Well, we'll see. If you think you know the answer, write that answer on the back of a nice, crisp, new $20 bill.
With Andy Jackson's picture on it.
Yes, indeed. And send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our Fair City.
Mass. 02238. Or you can email your answer to us from cartalk.com if you'd like to call us. Or even if you wouldn't like to call us, our number remains 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Simon from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
I'm just peachy, thank you, chaps.
Really?
Good.
Okay, we'll see if we can change that.
What's up?
Well, on my vehicle, which is a 2004... Mercedes 350 wagon. If I'm driving through town or driving normally, it's fine. I brake, everything's beautiful. If I'm on a freeway and I brake, even just to slow to change lanes, it seems that at speeds over 55 miles an hour, I get a shimmy in the front wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem logical. I had the oil changed a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, whenever you go to a Mercedes dealer, they don't say good morning, sir. They just go cha-ching.
Cha-ching.
So, obviously, I don't make many visits. But a couple of months ago, I had the oil changed. They checked the brakes. They said they're in good shape. The rotors were fine. And I had about 50% life left in them.
Oh, mm-hmm. And how soon after you had this little checkup done did you notice this condition?
About a month after I had the oil done.
Oh, so during that month's time, you had many occasions to drive it on the highway.
Absolutely.
And you had,
and it was fine.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad, because we can't blame it on the guys at the dealership.
Oh, I'd love to.
You can. It's worth a shot, Simon. But you have a classic case of warped disc rotors. And it's likely that the ones that are warped are in the front, because that's why you can feel it in your steering.
But it's not just me that warped.
Yeah, it's not you that's warped, right? And it's the rotors. Now, it's possible, but not likely, that when they took the wheels off to check the brakes, if they over-tightened, tremendously over-tightened, the wheel nuts upon putting the wheels back on, then they could have warped the rotors then. But if they had, you probably would have noticed it the first time you got on the highway.
No,
you didn't.
No.
How do you feel about lying about it?
I unfortunately was built with a conscience.
Yeah, I know. And
I'm not a mechanic.
Well, you're gonna have to.
Conscience is very expensive.
You're gonna have to pay up. And even though your pads are only half worn out, I would recommend that when you do have the brake job done, you put new rotors on and replace the pads at that time. You may need them just in the front. You may need all four. It's hard to know.
Uh-huh.
But if you have to go, this is probably the first money you will have spent on this car.
That's a fact, yeah.
Yeah, well, so do it.
Yeah, for a couple of $1,000, you'll be back on the road. See you, Simon. He's laughing.
He's happy.
Thanks for kidding.
You're a funny guy.
Thanks for our money.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Ta-ta.
Bye-bye.
888.
Now, why should we laugh at someone else's misfortune? That's not nice.
No, it isn't nice, but it's...
It's only money, though.
Yeah, no, it's a kind of a constant in the world of humor.
Of course.
Someone falls down a flight of stairs, you fall.
Laugh.
Someone gets squirted with a salsa bottle, you
laugh.
Yeah. Someone spends $2,000, you laugh, because it isn't you. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Karen calling from Birmingham.
Birmingham.
Yes.
What's up?
Okay, I have a 1994 Saturn, and the problem is that I have a $20 bill stuck inside the door, and I want to know how hard it would be for me to try to get it out by myself.
Mail it to us. Send us the car. We'll send you back the car.
How did it get stuck inside the door?
I knew you were going to ask that. My son, Andrew, wanted to go to McDonald's one night after the electricity went out, so we were in the drive-thru window. We had made our order. And I was sort of waiting impatiently to pay, and I was sort of impatiently tapping my $20 bill on the door when all of a sudden it disappeared into the slot where the window comes up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I want to know is, how could I do this myself?
Yeah, it's going to cost you $30.
Well, actually, I asked one day when I had the car in for an oil
change. What did they say?
They said it would cost me $50 in labor, so to forget about it.
Well, here's the problem. Even if they were to open the door,
yeah,
they would charge you the $50 and claim that the $20 wasn't there.
That's true. They might.
That would hurt. Jeez.
94.
Well, you know, that door panel, I'm not sure exactly how it's attached on a Saturn, but most of those door panels actually snap in.
Yeah.
Open the door and take a look at the bottom of the door from the inside.
The bottom of the door.
Yeah. And you'll either see something that looks like it's an attaching device, like the head of a screw, or you'll see nothing.
Okay.
And if you see nothing, that's pretty good. Because it means that there's a little pop-in device behind it, which is a little plastic thing stuck into the door.
Okay.
Oh, I have a better idea. You take it to your local gas station. You tell the guy, look, I'm pretty sure there's a $100 bill in there. but I don't know for sure. Whatever's in there, I'll split it with you.
No, better yet, you pull into the gas station. Oh, this is so devious. You pull into the gas station and you say, $20. And the guy fills it up. Gives you $20 worth of gas. When he comes over with his hand out, you say, you'll never believe what happened. The $20 bill just fell down inside here. And he'll say, not a problem. He'll take out a screwdriver out of his back pocket. He'll pry off this thing, and the $20 will fall right out the bottom.
That's a great idea.
Leave it to my brother. I don't have that kind of a mind. Where'd you get that? Where'd you inherit that from?
Because that way, even if he doesn't Is it, if he's not able to get the $20
you get
out,
the gas for
you
free.
Get $20 for the gas for nothing.
Or get sent to jail. I'll tell him that the people in Car Talk told me to do that.
There yeah. you go.
But I'm pretty sure you can get it out if you can pry off that bottom. You
right.
get a flashlight.
It won't follow. You'll have to reach in there.
You might have to reach in there or go to Sears and Roebuck.
Yeah.
Sears, they now call them.
Right.
And in the tool department, they have a thing called the grabber. It's a magnificent little device. It's about a foot and a half long. And you press the end of it and little claws come out the other end.
Wow.
So you can grab stuff that's inaccessible. So you lie on your back, you get a flashlight, you see the 20, you put the grabber up there, you grab the 20 and you pull it out and you push the door panel back in.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the grabber costs $19.95.
Oh.
Yeah, it does. Anyway, Karen.
No, you could do it yourself. I think it's going to be easy.
Okay, great.
See you, Karen.
Okay, thanks so much.
Bye-bye. 1-888.
This is one of the great cost-benefit analysis issues.
Yeah.
Is it worth doing it?
Well, I thought my thing was splitting it with the... That was lying, too, though, telling them to make $100.
$100.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember what I would drop to there. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name's Carl. I'm in Beaufort, North Carolina.
Hi, Carl.
Beaufort. Oh, that's definitely a Carl with
B-E-A-U-F-O-R-T, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
And I'm a master's student, currently getting a degree in coastal environmental management.
Yeah. Coastal environmental, so you guys decide where to put up seawalls and stuff.
Where not to put them up, more.
More, right.
Right.
Yeah, North Carolina is a good place to be if you're going to work in that area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of OJT going on there. Okay, on-the-job training, if you haven't been in the military.
Exactly.
So what's up, Carl?
Well, because of my environmental degree, I've got some problems with the cars I own, and I have questions about those. I have a 96 Suburban and a 97 Toyota 4Runner, which are both big SUVs that are gas guzzlers.
Mm.
And I'm wondering...
You own both of these vehicles?
Yes, I do. And
really?
Ideally, I would only have one large vehicle, but the Suburban I just bought from my father when he got a new one, so the price was right, so I did it.
Yeah.
And what I've been wondering about is the California emission standards that I've heard about. Can I get the emissions on these vehicles improved to reach the level of a car? And would it be ridiculously expensive?
Well, the 4Runner probably passes the California test anyway. If you look under the hood, there's a decal, and it may tell you that this vehicle was designed to pass the California emissions test.
Okay.
The Suburban, on the other hand, may say this is designed to pass the EPA test for the rest of the states.
Yeah. For Bosnia.
No, I mean, it's going to pass for the rest of the states.
Right.
But if it doesn't really pass, it might not be easy to get it to pass. But you're thinking of moving...
No, I have this guilt over having, you know...
He's an environmentalist. He feels guilty about driving these ridiculously monstrous gas-guzzling vehicles, and he wants us to give him the imprimatur, and we're not going to do it. I mean, it's as simple as that.
No, I want to know if I can get it changed. So...
Go to church. What are you calling us for? Come on. You have sinned, my son. And nothing you can do making a simple little phone call is going to get you off the hook. I mean, what are you, nuts?
Yeah, the only thing you can do, is you can take the Suburban to the crusher.
Yeah, no, I mean, you've done what you had to do, and you can't get absolution from us. No.
No, I need a big car. I've got a boat and a daughter and a big dog, and I'm going to be having more children, so I sometimes need the big car. And
the boat's the problem.
Yep.
And where do you drag it to?
To the ocean.
Yeah.
Why don't you just leave it there?
Costs money.
Yep.
Costs money. That's the whole deal.
But, yeah, but if you look at the costs involved, you got to. First of all, you have to have this ridiculously sized vehicle to get it there.
Yeah, you got to buy a trailer.
You got to buy the trailer. You got to buy the fishing gear.
Yeah, you got to get 3 miles to the gallon when you're dragging the boat.
Right. I mean, for the few times that you drag the boat, I mean, it'd be worth it to hire someone to house the boat for you near where you use it.
See, everything in your personal lifestyle is anathema to the profession that you've chosen. And that's, I guess that's a big conflict in your life, and you're probably having, you're probably in a psychiatrist.
This is a crisis. You're at crisis proportions here, Kyle. Yeah, this has reached crisis proportions.
I mean, everything that you're doing is against everything that you profess
to believe
in. And
you called us so you could try to squeeze an extra half a mile per gallon or a fewer parts of hydrocarbons? Unburned hydrocarbons out of the picture?
You've answered the question, really, which was whether the emissions could be lowered.
Yeah, and you don't want to talk to us anymore, right? And I don't blame you.
All right, well, we've given you a hard enough time. We'll let you go. But
all right.
I would ditch the boat, ditch the Suburban.
Hey, Carl, thanks a million for calling. You're a good guy.
Thanks.
Sorry to give you a hard time, but you deserved every bit of it.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
Poor guy.
I'm driving around in this Hummer, I work for the EPA.
He calls with a genuinely altruistic motive. I mean, he was trying to make it sound that way.
We saw through
his. He must drive this enormous vehicle, and he's looking for help. He's looking for us to provide him with a little information how he can reduce the emissions so he won't feel guilty.
I know. He needs a preacher, not us.
And boy, we jumped all over this poor guy. Poor Carl. We're sorry, Carl.
Carl.
Well,
oh,
it's happened again. You have squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mayor, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman, and our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Somerville No Frill Lemon Dill Mixed Grill Jelly Fill Roadkill Chew and Chill, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge Inovera. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our interpretive dance instructor is Tristan Shout. Our staff alpinist is Ariana Topiet. Our staff ornithologist is Seymour Robbins. Our divorce attorney is Carmine Not Yours. Our sexual harassment investigator is Hank Pankey. Our meteorologist from the New Delhi office is Luke Audovindo. The pre-recorded portions of today's show were selected by staff librarian Albin Heard before. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our mother-in-law liaison is Stella Payne Diaz. And our Russian chauffeur is Bikoff and Dropoff. And, of course, our staff tailor is Hugh Jass. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the Kierkegaard quoting grocery clerks in Harvard Square. Yes, Huey Louie Dewey. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1414, download classic Car Talk episodes, and check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week, teaching your teen to drive.
Is there anything more fraught with tension and teeth gnashing than teaching your teen to drive?
Well, there's being in the NPR boardroom while we're on.
Well, that's true. But to help out parents and teens, we've created a teen driving area. It has tips for teens on how to drive better and how to manage your nervous parents, and tips for parents on how to survive the experience.
Xanax.
Check out the teen driving area now over at cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Malyotzis everywhere think to themselves, you know, Smith has a nice ring to it, whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.